This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My next guest is Will Allen, an urban farmer and an international leader in urban agriculture. He's the founder and CEO of Growing Power, Inc. in Milwaukee. That's a nonprofit organization that seeks to transform the cultivation, production, and delivery of healthy foods to underserved urban populations. Will Allen will be the keynote speaker at the Iowa Organic Conference. That's at the Iowa Memorial Union on the University of Iowa campus, Sunday, November 18th and Monday, November 19th. Will Allen, welcome to our program.
Hey, it's great to talk to you today.
Some people may be thrown off or not have the best idea, a good idea, of what it means to be an urban farmer. What does that mean, urban farming?
Well, it means that we're growing food inside cities or right on the edges of cities, and it's become a really big deal today for a lot of reasons. The fact that more people are moving into cities worldwide, and that it's really unsustainable to continue to ship food from far away. As a matter of fact, a lot of the food that we eat is over 10 days old before we get it into our belly. So developing a local food system and utilizing all the vacant land that's inside many of our big industrial cities around the country really makes sense.
What sort of science can you point to that food grown in your neighborhood or on the outside of your city is better for you than food that has been shipped in and is perhaps 5 or 10 days in transit?
Well, we know we have scientific evidence that shows that our soils nationwide are 50% less fertile than it was 50 years ago, for one thing. But also, when food is shipped, it loses a lot of its nutrient value. So we have the scientific evidence to prove that. So it's really important to be able to get that food into our bellies within a day, day and a half of production. And we can do that. Best case scenario, of course, if people grow food in their backyards or side yards, a percentage of food. I'm not saying that folks can grow all of their food, but if they can grow a percentage of their food where they live or in community gardens or access farmers markets that are all over America today, I mean, there's that industry has really grown. We really need to recognize that we're still losing our rural farmers. So we really have to support our rural farmers because, you know, when we have stressful times like this summer where we had a tremendous drought really cuts down. But the good news is the fact that today more young people want to start farming. And one of the best places to start because of the cost of buying a farm is in the city on vacant land, vacant lots. To be able to grow it on asphalt or concrete or rooftops using compost, of course, resurrecting the soil and not growing in the contaminated soil in our cities.
So you've got suburban areas, perhaps not found in Iowa, but I'm thinking of Detroit or some other places where you have vast expanses of places that are not of use for residential areas. You can turn those into farms and really change the face of the community.
Absolutely. I mean, if you take a city like Detroit, where there's 169 square miles of land, half of the city is not occupied anymore. So there's thousands of acres inside the city of Detroit that could be utilized in developing a food system, a local food system that would create hundreds of different categories of jobs if we do it right, and thousands of jobs. So we have that same situation in the city of Chicago, where there's 77,000 vacant lots and 33 square miles of vacant land. So it goes on and on. All these cities like Youngstown, Ohio, Flint, Michigan, Milwaukee, all of these cities have distressed housing that has to come down, and that space can be used to grow food. There's already space in all the vacant factories that have tremendous amount of land. I mean, there's factories and land in Milwaukee with 12 acres of land and 235,000 square foot buildings that could be used for aquaponics and aquaculture. Mm-hmm. So there's tremendous opportunities, and like I said, the good thing is these young people, under 40 group, that really dominate the food system today that want to learn how to farm.
Right, and yet you're coming to speak in Iowa, of course, a big agricultural state. In a place like Iowa, where we name some places there with a lot of urban blight, we have an abundance of rural farmland, even surrounding our urban areas. Does that still make sense for us in Iowa?
Well, our organization works with not only urban farmers, but rural farmers in small towns. Small towns are devastated as well. I mean, there are folks in small towns that are on assistance today that used to be, these small towns used to be had an agricultural base. But now today, many of those folks don't have jobs. And we need to go back to more diversified integrated farm systems where back in the old days in Iowa, you had a farm where you had not only grew vegetables, but you had animals like pigs and cattle and so forth. But today, when you look at most of the cropland in Iowa, you see soybeans and corn. So we need to go back to those days where we create these small farms in these rural communities and really help those rural communities and attract young people to these communities, because otherwise these communities are going to be in bad shape, and they already are. As I travel the country, I see it all over the South, which is even a bigger problem, where industrial agriculture has really taken over the landscape of farming.
If you've just joined us, my guest is Will Allen, an urban farmer and international leader in urban agriculture. He's founder and CEO of Growing Power, Inc. That's an organization, a nonprofit that seeks to transform the cultivation, production, and delivery of healthy foods to underserved urban populations. He'll be the keynote speaker at this year's Iowa Organic Conference in Iowa City. I'd like to ask you a little bit about your background, your upbringing, Will Allen. You grew up on a farm?
Yeah, I grew up on a farm. My father and my mother were sharecroppers from around Aiken, South Carolina, that moved to the Washington, D.C. area in the 30s. And unlike many African-American males who did sharecropping and was moving for these industrial jobs in the north, my father wanted my brothers, myself and my brothers, to continue the family legacy of farming, which I appreciate today. I might have not appreciated it back when I had to do all the hard work on a farm. But today I really appreciate all the skills that he passed on, that I'm now passing on to other folks. But I was also All-American basketball, high school All-American basketball player, and had over 100 scholarship offers, and I attended University of Miami. When I left the farm in 1967, I said that I would never do this work again, and I was going to go to college and get an education and play professional basketball, which I did after college, and never go back to the farming. I thought I was missing all my friends who didn't farm. I thought I was missing all this great life.
Was there a moment, wasn't there an event that changed your opinion on farming?
Yeah, there was a transformative moment. My last place that I played professional basketball was in Belgium. And one day, one of my Belgian teammates, his family had a farm, and he invited me out. They were planting potatoes. And as soon as I touched the soil and started helping them, it was something I realized I really missed, and it was some hidden passion, I guess, that I had for farming. And I asked the team to get me a place in the country, and that's when I really got back into farming. I got 25 chickens, and I started growing vegetables, and I would have the other Americans from the other teams come over during Thanksgiving and Christmas, because that was during the basketball season. We couldn't come home, and we'd have a big feast with the vegetables that my wife and I grew, here I was back doing what I did and my family did, was to grow food and share it with other people, family and extended family and so forth. So When I got back to the States, that's when I started farming. And, of course, buying a farm in Wisconsin was very expensive, so I had to have an off-farm job. And I did that working for Procter & Gamble in sales and sales technology until and farmed, got up to 100 acres of vegetables, and kind of had two full-time jobs as I was putting my kids through through school. And in 1993 is when I bought the last remaining farm in the city of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. So you spent a number of years working in corporate marketing at Procter & Gamble, and then started this company, Growing Power, this nonprofit. What was that like to jump off onto that idea and to grow it? Were you nervous that it wouldn't work, that it wouldn't catch on?
It was a kind of an evolutionary process. I bought the farm for selfish reasons, to sell my farm produce. We're located between halfway between two freeways, interstates, and on a very busy street. And I thought that I could sell my farm produce on my 100-acre farm about 45 minutes south of Milwaukee. And about 2 years into the project, I helped a youth group who wanted to grow an organic garden, and I had some space behind the greenhouses on the farm. And we got a front-page story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel back in 1995, and my friend said, well, you should start a nonprofit organization. So that's how I kind of got sucked in, working with the kids. And it was never a planned thing to be doing what I'm doing today, to have 140 employees and 23 farms and 15 regional training centers and doing work around the world. So that was never a plan. It just kind of evolved and took on a life of its own.
Tell me a little bit, Will Allen, about the main differences between urban and rural food production in terms of the techniques that are used. Are there great differences?
Yeah, there's a few differences. I mean, in a rural farm setting, of course, you have to have fertile soil, and you have to add compost if you're doing organic farming like we do. But inside the city, there's a lot of toxins in the soil. There's lead. These cities were industrial cities, so they're heavy lead cities. They have a lot of arsenic and a lot of other bad guys in the soil. So we have no tilling equipment. So all the farming that we do is on new soil. We grow soil. We compost. This year we'll compost 40 million pounds of carbon and nitrogen to create thousands of yards of compost. So we build beds. Our signature growing style is that we grow beds that are 36 inch wide, 24 inches high, and with 18 inch pathways between the beds. So that's what we do. We grow on asphalt, and we grow on concrete, on hard pan clay, on rooftops. So that's the difference. It's the cost is much higher. We have 25 acres of greenhouses now, and we're on our way to 100 acres of greenhouses in and around southeast Wisconsin. And we have 8 farms in Chicago and 1 in Madison, Wisconsin. So the whole thing is to really, we're at a point now after 20 years of evolving to this point, is to really quantify a lot of things. We grow a lot of fish. We do aquaponics to really quantify things like how many fish do you have to grow to support a $75,000 a year living wage job? How many hoop houses do we have to build to support the same thing, a $75,000? And what is a cropping? What type of crops do we need to grow to maximize the production in those greenhouses? We're growing at $5 a square foot. So we look at, instead of looking at farming in terms of acreage and hectares, we look at it in terms of square feet. Mm-hmm. So if we're able to grow food at $5 a square foot or above, that equates to, at $5 a square foot, $200,000 gross income per acre in an annual year. So that's really important, that every square foot is important inside the city.
How does produce, plants or fish, as you mentioned, or livestock produced in this way, how does that compare in terms of cost with what we see that is mass-produced and trucked in?
Well, you can cut costs. Part of what we do and the possibilities and the future of being very creative in growing food this way is to be able to, of course, when you run a business, it's all about the cost of production. So to be able to grow your own soil, to grow your own energy, because we use a lot of solar energy at our facilities, to be able to grow food without using fossil fuel, using compost to heat our hoop houses and so forth, using those techniques, using a water catchment, as we capture at our national headquarters 30,000 gallons of water off of our greenhouses and hoop houses. To be able to do that is really important because we know it doesn't cost $4 to grow a tomato, an organic tomato. So we need the shipping cost, we don't have those shipping costs. Bringing a semi from Salinas Valley today is about three times the amount it was ago. Mm-hmm. So to be able to get rid of those shipping costs and be able to produce enough food, because it's important for us to increase our production, to really scale it up, to change the dynamics, because in a city like Milwaukee or Chicago, less than 1% of the food is grown within the local arena. So to be able to change that dynamic, and we think we can over the next 2 years to about 10% of local food, that's a tremendous amount of income for the local community and tremendous amount of job creation. For the community, it's an economic development piece, and we're in a city where the politicos have really stepped up and helped us in terms of opening up policies that we can do this.
Besides the benefits that you just mentioned there, I'm sure that people can look at benefits that you can't quantify on a sheet of paper, on a spreadsheet. Having gardens in your midst, having greenery.
There's so many benefits in terms of bringing people together in communities at a time where people just don't talk to each other anymore in neighborhoods. But having community gardens, having these farms in these communities bring people together. But the biggest benefit that I see, one of the biggest benefits, is good food is our medicine. So if we're able to get good food into people's bellies, they're going to be healthier. Our pillars of health are nutrition and stress management and exercise. And if we can get, and two-thirds of that is the nutrition part. So if we can get that fixed, when people start eating healthier food and we're able to get this locally produced food like we've been able to do into our school system, then things really change.
And, of course, getting out and tending a field or tending your urban plot can be relaxing and work against stress as well, right?
Yeah, it's really important because it's gardening is probably one of the most therapeutic things one can do. And to see the transformation of these kids in the cities where people always said those kids wouldn't, you know, many people years ago would tell me those kids won't farm. You know, not true. There's more youth gardens and organizations running youth gardening projects around the country. They've really kind of are responsible. These organizations are really responsible for the scaling up. And of course, the First Lady putting a garden on just a 1,200 foot garden on the White House lawn to begin with. Really increased the amount of people doing gardening. They say we estimate it's over 10 million people started gardening when she did that. And, of course, the Let's Move campaign to end childhood obesity is probably one of the best things that any First Lady has ever done. to really alleviate that problem.
You've outlined this vision for us. What is chiefly standing in the way of that now? What are the factors working against it that you need to overcome?
Some of the challenges that we have right now, we don't have enough soil. We have to grow soil in these cities. So composting and being able to overcome some of the negative policies around preventing a lot of folks from composting. Also, many of the policies of not being able to farm in all three or four zoning districts. We need to be able to farm in residential, commercial, and industrial areas. The other thing is to secure land for long-term usage. And now is a great time because land is very cheap. 10 years from now, we don't know if this land is going to be available or it's cheap. So now's the time to purchase land. So a lot of the funding from foundations and so forth maybe should go to the organizations for them to be able to purchase land and keep it in agriculture or green space for years to come.
Will Allen, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Will Allen is an urban farmer. He's the founder and CEO of the nonprofit organization Growing Power, Inc., and he'll be the keynote speaker at the upcoming Iowa Organic Conference. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have a great weekend.